It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Well, now that the holidays are over, we'll get back to the tough guy blood and guts stuff with an all Jack Webb podcast this week. Starting off with Pat Novak for Hire and the Geranium Plant from 1949.
Sure, I'm Pat Novak for Hire. That's what the sign out in front of my office says. Pat Novak for Hire. Oh, there are a lot of ways to put it, but it's easier if you let your slip show right from the beginning. Because down on the waterfront in San Francisco, you got to do a lot of things to make a living. Otherwise, it's like being a CPA in a charity ward. I rent boats and do anything else that'll keep a bum lawyer in beer and broadcloth. Works out all right. You make a few bucks if you don't forget there are only two questions you can ask anybody down here. When and how much. Even then, you gotta watch out, unless you like your trouble without a chaser. I found that out Monday night. I closed shop and I walked down the street to Noonan's Bar. Well, it really isn't a bar. It's just a couple of stools with a bottle opener and a jukebox full of Irish tenors, but it's good enough to give you a shove down the road. Must have been about 11. I was sitting at one end of the place by myself, sorting out mistakes and spending a half dollar on the bar, so I don't know when she came in, but she came in. I remember that.
Does it always come up heads?
If you're lucky. Who are you?
If you're that lucky, you'd have dollar bills to do it with.
Look, I'm low on chatter. Why don't you go down the counter and talk to the racy set, huh?
I'd rather buy you a drink.
Noonan's a social clamor. He's gonna throw you out.
You buy me one, then.
And I'm broke to strangers. Now, that winds up the conversation. See you later.
We'll talk Thursday, then. I went to your office, but they said you were over here. I want to hire you, Mr. Novak.
Have you got a name to go with a figure?
It won't fit in your file. I want you for 3 hours' work tomorrow afternoon. Can you do it?
I said yes. It might be too tough.
There's a flower stand at the corner of Post and Kearney. I want you to go to that stand tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. Pick up a geranium plant at this address.
I'm too big for a Western Union boy.
Are you too big for $50?
No. Must be a pretty geranium at those prices.
Some people love nature, Mr. Novak. Do you care?
No, I know a guy who likes parrots.
You go to the stand and tell them you want the plant. Take it straight to the address I gave you. It's important. Don't let it out of your hands.
For $50, I'll act like we're married.
I better give you the money now.
Oh, you're eager. Suppose I don't deliver.
I found you tonight. I can do it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, where do I get in touch with you?
You don't. Mr. Novak, this is the last time over the course. So take a good look now.
Yeah, I'm away past midnight already. Suppose something goes wrong tomorrow.
Then it's very simple, Mr. Novak. You won't have to send for flowers. Good night.
I watched her as she turned and walked out the door. She was wearing a flowered print dress, and as she walked, the roses kept getting mixed up with the daisies. She walked with a nice, friendly movement, like the trapdoor on a gallows. As she reached the door, she turned and smiled once, as if she knew the $50 was just for laughs. I scooped up the dough before anybody could see it, because at Noonan's, everybody gets broke in one motion. I left a few minutes later, and I went home to bed. I dream real good on $50, so I felt good the next afternoon when I got to the corner of Post and Kearney. The flower stand was there, all right, and I leaned against the storefront to watch the guy for a while. Maybe I should have known then, because right away I got the idea he didn't know what he was doing. But you can say that for a lot of senators. So I let it ride. When the jewelry store clock across the street said 2 o'clock, I walked up to him.
Can I do something for you?
Yeah, give me a geranium plant.
What kind do you want?
Big one, a small one, I don't care. It's 2 o'clock. I'll take that kind.
You want the geranium?
Look, it's going to get dark. You got that long to argue?
Here's the one you want, then.
If you say so. You want to wrap it?
No, it's all right. You carry it that way.
Well, I'm going to look real funny walking around with a handful of geranium.
Why do you want one, then?
I see. You don't feel like talking about it.
No. Just take it and be happy.
Yeah. How much?
Nothing. Doesn't cost a thing.
Suit yourself. You won't make much dough that way.
I'll make even less talking to you. Just take the plant and be careful.
Oh? How do you know what I'm going to do with the geranium?
I don't, mister. Some people eat them. Just be careful and goodbye.
Well, the way things were going, Post Street began to look like the main drag in Casablanca. I watched the guy fumble around with a customer for a minute, and then I crossed the street and started up toward Union Square. The cop gave me a kind of a funny look when he saw the geranium. He smiled as if he thought I had a pair of dancing sandals in my coat pocket. About halfway up the block, I stopped to look in an art store. Right then, I noticed the guy with a cane for the first time. He was standing near me, looking in the other window. He was a little guy and kind of wrinkled and bumpy. His skin looked like a cucumber full of powder. I started up the street and pulled in at a bookstore. He stopped too, and I knew he was following me. When I got to Stockton, I turned left and walked toward Geary Street. Halfway down, there's a little street called Maiden Lane. Oh, it sounds gentle, but so does Vesuvius when you say it fast. I just started to cross when a black Nash pulled away from the curb. Some dead relative must have put in a good word for me.
Hey, over here! Hey, pull him over! Hey, over here! You all right, mister?
Yeah, I'll do, I guess.
You're lucky you're not dead.
Yeah, we're all that way. Give me a hand, will you? Thanks.
That car came out of there and hit you on purpose. You're lucky you're not dead.
All right. I owe the house a free roll.
This lady here took down the license number you wanted?
Yeah, thanks.
You sure you're all right?
Yeah, I'm a slow bleeder. I dropped a plant somewhere around here.
This it? This red thing?
Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Didn't even hurt the plant. That's something. You know, when I saw that car come out of there and hit you, you know what I thought about you?
That fella's lucky he's not dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I looked around, but the little guy with the cane had disappeared. As I crossed Union Square, I kept looking around, but he was gone. Well, I tried to forget about it, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. Kept coming back and showing up again like a bad reputation. Why had the guy started to follow me and then stopped so suddenly? And how about that guy in the car and that $50 geranium? Well, I got a cab over at the St. Francis stand and I rode out to the address that the girl gave me. On the way, I looked at the flower. From what I could see, it was just a geranium planted in a little wooden box. Like all the rest of them, it bloomed unevenly with buds that looked too nervous to come out, like a debutante with thick ankles. Well, the cab pulled up at the address. It was a rooming house out on Clay Street. The note I had said third floor rear, so I went up there and knocked. There was no answer, so I went in expecting to find anything. Anything but what I did find. Hello?
Go away. Go away and leave me alone.
She closed her eyes and stopped talking. She was so sick it showed like a searchlight in a cave. Her complexion was pasty and the color of a November sky. She had no expression on her face, just thin lips drawn so tightly the rims were white. No, she wasn't ready to quit yet, but you could tell she'd been papering the house for years. And you wouldn't want to bet on her. She was going to last about as long as a warm snowflake, it was easy to tell. You got a bad cough, you need some sun.
I need more than that.
Yeah, I guess you do.
Who are you?
Relax, I'm not the welcome angel. I just brought you some flowers.
Is it a joke for somebody?
I don't know, lady. With me, it's a $50 hustle. They're your flowers, so you work out the right answer.
Go away. Go away, please.
You want the flowers?
You brought them for me, didn't you? Leave them and go away.
Well, it's just a geranium. I'm going to leave it on the table.
Why'd they send you?
My reason was 50 bucks.
Did you come to hurt me?
I don't know. Do you rate it?
Oh, I'm too tired. You couldn't really hurt me, could you? Thank you for coming. Thank you for your kindness.
Sure, if that's what it is, you're welcome. That's all she said, and that's all that happened in that little room up on Clay Street. It wasn't much, and it wasn't enough to worry you, but for some reason, I felt like a man in quicksand complaining about his height. When I left there, I took a car down to Market Street, and I had dinner. Well, it didn't go right, because I kept thinking about this afternoon and last night. Who did she mean by they, and where did all these people fit together? The guy with the cane, the gal that gave me the $50 and the little chair about a maiden lane. Well, I tried to forget about it, but it wasn't easy. It was like trying to change a typewriter ribbon with mittens on. After dinner, I went home. It was about 8 o'clock, and when I got in the apartment, it was dark. Before I had a chance to put on the light, I knew somebody was in the bedroom. I walked over to the door. In the dim light, it looked like a walrus in pants, but it turned out to be Inspector Hellman from Homicide.
Hello, Novak. I just dropped in for a chat.
Do you always chat with your hand in the bureau drawer?
It's restful. I've been looking over your stuff.
Is this a social call or are you out stealing?
Where you been, Novak?
What do you care, Hellman?
All right, I'll tell you where I've been. In a third floor room out in Clay Street.
I left one this afternoon.
It's the same one. Your fingerprints are all over the joint.
I'll bet you checked everywhere.
What were you doing out there?
Delivering flowers.
Is that your best try, Novak?
It's the best I'm going to do for you. If you don't like it, check with a woman out there. I brought her flowers and left.
What woman?
The one on the couch, a black-haired girl with a half-dead look.
You're wrong twice.
Huh?
There's no girl out there, unless she's tattooed on the guy's chest.
Oh.
And that guy doesn't have a half-dead look. It's better than that.
All the way.
That's right. He's dead enough to pray for. Will that do?
Hellman's sleeve so full of fat, I didn't expect anything else up there. He flipped on the light, and I could see he was real pleased with himself. He was smiling like a guy who's just found his partner bidding no trump with 13 spades. He sat down on the bed and unbuttoned his coat. Part of his stomach oozed out and hung over his belt like a 1910 lampshade. He lit a cigarette, and then he began to run his tongue over a set of teeth that looked more like old mandolin picks than teeth. He blew smoke and looked about as appetizing as a piece of squid pie.
Must have been a short argument, Novak. The coroner says the guy checked out in a hurry.
What else does the coroner say?
That it was good poison. You buy only the best, Novak.
Don't stub your toe, Hellman. I went up there to deliver a geranium plant.
So far, you got a good case. The guy was poisoned with a spring needle, hidden in that geranium box.
Who was he?
He didn't say, and there wasn't any identification. Do you want to help?
I don't know, Hellman. When I was there, we were doing Camille. Some ghost woman was dying on the couch by inches. It was her room. You better check.
We did. The room was rented 10 days ago by a man named George Langley. The landlady says there's never been a woman in the room.
That's what all landladies say. Wake up, Hellman. I stood there and watched her shake like a dust mop for 10 minutes. You can follow up on her and then check that flora stand at Kearney and Post.
What do I check for, boll weevils?
He's the guy that gave me that geranium plant.
We'll check. I want you down at headquarters by midnight tonight, Novak. You can talk to yourself till then. After that, you talk to us.
I'll make it up from here on, Hellman. You don't like it the other way.
Suit yourself, Novak. You know when you're due. In the meantime, we'll find out what we can.
I can't wait that long, Hellman. You couldn't find a tractor on the back porch. I'd hang if I waited for your boys.
That's what you're going to do. And at midnight, you can dangle as high as you want.
I don't mind, as long as my feet are on the same level as your head. When Hellman left, I sat down to try to piece things together. I knew everything was there if I could just shove it into place. It was like trying to swap an egg beater for a mixmaster. I was pretty sure there was something about that geranium plant I should remember. One little thing that threw everything else out of focus. Well, I finally gave up. I was $50 ahead and one murder wrapped behind. Depends on how you like your fun. $50 is all right, but the pleasure's limited. Like giving somebody a hot foot in an ammunition dump. If I was going to drag the town, I needed help. So I looked up the only honest guy I know. An ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. Oh, he's all right for a guy who thinks people with steady hands are lazy. I finally found him in a little tinsel joint on Mason Street. It was high class for the neighborhood. The smoke was only a week old, and they had a cigarette girl. A long, leggy biscuit that wandered around trying to sell a sour smile at sweet prices. Jocko was down at the end of the bar, rolling some olives back and forth. The rhythm was fine.
Ah, Patsy, you're just in time to help me off the wagon.
A stout glass for Mr. Novak.
No, I want to talk to you, Jocko.
Oh, Patsy, confidentially, I hate martinis. I just drink them for the vitamins. Everybody should have a few vegetables, and I have chosen olives.
Look, I'm in trouble, Jocko. Will you sober up and talk?
I could do that easily. I've done it 2 or 3 times, and it's no trick at all. But I refuse because it's a vulgar display of willpower.
Will you stop, Jocko?
You know, Patsy, there are only 2 things that could cause my downfall. Whiskey or women. I'm not particular. You find a nice old widow, and I'll quit this stuff.
All right, all right.
Some plump old party with a memory as vivid as my own. Preferably somebody rich enough to convince me the lines in her face weren't put there by worry.
Oh, stop it, will you?
Patsy, I'll allow you to motivate my descent, but I will not permit you to bring it to a halt. I apologize for interrupting. Go ahead.
What do you know about flowers?
Oh, I think they're pretty on a woman's shoulder, but I suppose that's mixed devotion. Why?
Well, I'm going to need your help, Jocko. There's a dead guy out on Clay Street, and Hellman's campaigning for me.
How do the flowers fit in?
A geranium plant. The guy was poisoned with a needle in the box. I took the plant up there to a woman.
Oh, a clumsy approach. Why a geranium plant?
It's a mixed-up story. I got hired in Noonan's bar to pick it up this afternoon at Post and Kearney. I got gumshoed all the way up Post Street and hit by a car at Maiden Lane.
You looked bent when you walked in.
I took it out to this address, and I gave it to a dying woman. Now she's disappeared, and Hellman's after me for the dead guy on her floor. Oh, I need some help, Jocko. I gotta find a way out of this.
Well, you passed up a golden opportunity when that car hit you.
That's one of the places you come in. Now, here's the license. I want you to hop down and check the registration, will you?
What else?
Find out who runs that flower stand at the corner of Post and Kearney. Now, if you get back in time, I can check tonight. Tag by my place. I'll either be there or I'll leave a message.
Where are you going?
To find a woman.
That seems like a peculiar way to handle a crisis.
Well, I gotta find the gal that started me out on this.
Patsy, I wish you'd forget about women.
And I wish you'd forget about whiskey.
Yes, we both have our problems. Except I enjoy one safeguard that you don't. At least I can look at the label and tell how old it is. Good night, lover.
I got out of there and I went by Noonan's place. I asked him if he knew the girl in there last night. He said after 45, a man forgets about a woman's face, so I checked that lead off and started on the other girl. I hit all the cab stands out near Clay Street, and I finally found a hack that picked her up. It was about 4 o'clock, he said. She had luggage and rode over to Janet Street on Telegraph Hill, but he couldn't remember the address at the best rates in town, so I checked off that one, too. From here on, it was going to be a rough ride. I didn't know where to dig. I might as well have been out looking for a stick with one end. Well, I could try one more thing. I went by to search the Clay Street joint. It was a dirty room, and the geranium hadn't helped. There was a sweet odor and a thick, dusty cloud all over the place. It was like going to sleep in a bag of an old vacuum cleaner. There wasn't anything there that could help, and on my way out, I heard footsteps. I snapped off the light and waited. The door opened slowly. I couldn't see her face, but I knew it was the girl from Noonan's. Turn on the light and you'll see your friends.
Well, Mr. Novak.
Sit down. Let's talk.
In here? Why don't we drop our gymnasium and get some fresh air?
We can start with your name.
It's Evie. Say your piece, Mr. Novak. I've run out of $50 bills.
Yeah, that's the way it is with my patients. Who killed the guy?
I don't know, Patsy. I can narrow it down to one county for you, but after that you'll have to do your own sorting.
The police think I did it.
Maybe you did. You look big enough to carry the load. I don't care, Patsy. I'm not going to weep. I've got about 3 tiers left, and he isn't high enough on the list to rate one.
Who was he? And how'd you find out he was dead?
There's generally a dirty rim in the washbowl. His name was Charles Dowd. Don't worry about him. He was a small-time guy set to fast music.
Well, I'm going to worry about him because homicide's worried about him.
Then worry in a calm way, Patsy. You do it that way, I'll help.
Sit down. Now, look, lady. You better help out or I'll lose your teeth for you.
Patsy, you're tough. And everything, I guess.
Who runs that flower stand?
It wouldn't help. When he gave you that geranium, there was nothing wrong.
For $50, there had to be something wrong.
It wasn't full of poison. I know it was in there, and it wasn't poison. Somebody made a switch up here.
What happened to the girl?
I don't know. Relax. You're going to use up all that nice energy.
Look, sis, you can haul in those long legs and give me some answers.
I'm going to haul them in long enough to ask a few questions. My turn now, Patsy. Back over toward the door. You can talk on your way.
Yeah. You look good with a gun.
You made a deal with George. I want to hear about it, Novak.
I don't even know George. If he's got a part, you just dealt him in.
I'm too old for fairy tales, Patsy. George got to you and found out about that geranium box. It couldn't have happened any other way.
Sorry, lady.
Remember, you're nothing to me, Novak. You're $50 worth of muscle. You're $50, and I'll spend you fast.
Go easy. You're going to break open a seam. I don't know your boy, George, and I can forget you, too.
You can do it while you're talking. I came a long way, Patsy, too far to toss it over for a mail order bum. You're just a passing pair of pants to me, and I'll throw you away faster than a wad of gum.
Now's your chance, baby. Come on.
Hurting my shoulder.
Relax. You're not going to have one in a minute. Come on, drop it. Now, I'll reach down for that gun, and I'll jam you in the basement faster than a ton of coal.
All right.
Now, let's hear you talk.
I would, Patsy, but you're not listening.
That's what happens when you don't watch the door. Somebody falls in love with the back of your head. I didn't even have a chance to see who hit me. I don't know what good it would have done unless you're the kind of a guy who keeps a scrapbook on those things. When I woke up, I had company. He was taking a nap, too, only his was going to last longer. It was the little guy with the cane. He tailed me right to the end. He was lying there with his mouth open and a bunch of pink gum showing as if he was trying to pick up a few bucks with a toothpaste ad. I was still groggy, and I couldn't see around the room, but I could hear a slow, steady squeaking sound. I turned my head, and Hellman was sitting in a rocking chair. He looked as happy as a choir boy on Christmas Eve.
You have a good sleep, Novak?
Oh, why don't they move the morgue down here?
Yeah, I guess you ran out of poison.
Why don't you go away, Hellman?
Home, maybe, huh?
I don't owe your wife anything, so I'll wish that.
Who's the guy?
I don't know.
He looked chummy when I got here.
I don't know, Hellman. He followed me all over Post Street this afternoon. Check him yourself.
I did. There's nothing on him.
I'll bet his gold fillings are gone now.
Your trial run was a guy named Charles Dowd.
I know.
He was arrested in 1942 on suspicion of espionage.
He's in business again. A whole bunch of them are, and the kicker has something to do with that geranium plant.
What bunch?
These dead guys and a lot of others on the same schedule. It's that geranium plant. It all started at Post and Kearney. You better check that florist stand.
Don't you ever get tired, Novak.
Huh?
We checked the florist stand at Post and Kearney. The answer's no.
Did you talk to the guy?
No, because there is no florist stand at Post and Kearney.
You're crazy, Hellman. I got a geranium plant there this afternoon.
There's no florist stand at Post and Kearney. If you got a geranium, it was grown out of a crack in the sidewalk.
I left Hellman standing there over the dead man. The little guy was looking up at Hellman with a dull, bored look like an usher in a burlesque house. I was sure now there was something about that geranium I'd missed. If I could find the string and pull it, the whole thing would unravel. The questions were piling up, and there was only one answer. Who got to that box and made a switch? Well, it was close to 11 when I got back to my apartment. Jocko was in the kitchen working on an experiment.
Ah, Patsy, I'm drinking to your memory. I'm making up for cheap booze with extra sentiment.
What'd you find out?
You were mixed up. There is no flower stand at Kearney and Post.
Now, look, I've been through all that once. It was Post and Kearney. I couldn't have made a mistake.
Oh, anybody can confuse a street. It can be done easily. I once confused two whole suburbs.
Yeah, all right.
I boycotted a bar in Alameda for months before I found out they gave me the Mickey in San Carlos.
Now, look, I know what I did, Jocko. Maybe the flower stand moved. Maybe it was never there before. But today it was at Post and Kearney. How about that license number?
The car is registered in the name of George Langley. Who's he?
He rented the murder room, and he's mixed up in a switch on that geranium plant.
What kind of switch?
I don't know, but whatever it was, George did it. When it left that stand, there was something else in it besides a poison needle. Everybody knew it. The girl and the little guy with the cane, probably the guy that drove that car.
They switched plants?
No, they changed. Yeah. Yeah, I guess he could have done that too, huh?
Was the man with the cane behind you when you got hit by the car?
Yeah, I think you're right, Jocko.
He wasn't trying to kill you. In the confusion, the man with the cane switched plants on you.
Oh, Jocko, you're an angel. I'm going to do something for you someday.
You already have. I charged this bottle of whiskey to you.
Yeah, Novak talking.
I got news for you.
Mine's good, too. That poison needle plant was engineered by the little guy with the cane.
We identified him. His fingerprints match an espionage agent called George Langley.
Well, he was due any minute.
There's nothing else on him except he lived in a place up on Janet Street.
So it happened that way.
Huh?
That's where the other geranium is, Hellman. You better get up there before they ring down the curtain. That other plant's going to draw all the boys and girls.
What does that prove?
Nothing, except you haven't got any business bothering a flower unless you're a bee. never know how the cards are going to fall, but when it's a wild game like Red Dog, whichever way they fall, it's going to hurt. And the last card's the one that breaks your back. So when Hellman hung up, I grabbed a cab and rushed out to Janet Street. It's a little short street draped down the side of Telegraph Hill like a torn ribbon. When Hellman pulled up at the top of the hill, I met him, and we started down to George Langley's address. Hellman opened the front door, and as we started into the bedroom, we ran into a traffic jam.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hello, Evie. This is Hellman from Homicide.
I don't have time now, Patsy.
That's all you got, baby. Grab her bag there, Hellman.
Patsy, you're crazy.
Open her bag, Hellman. That's what they're all after. There's the geranium over by the window.
Let's have the bag, lady. You're all too grabby. I'll take it. Come on, Evie. Who's this guy?
A pixie, Hellman. He's the guy that sold me the flower down at Post and Kearney.
I'm sorry you got mixed up, Novak, but I'm short on regrets tonight. Give me the bag, Evie.
Go easy. We're going to get in too deep.
You're in up to your nostrils now, baby. The bag. I want that piece of paper.
You don't need a gun, Gerard.
That's up to you, Evie. You double-crossed me, and I'm too old for a new set of tricks.
That's the way it had to be, Gerard. You can see that. When George cut in, there was nothing else to do. He was high man in, low man out.
You're out there, and I want the bag.
Stay away from me, Jerry.
Give me time, I'll get far away.
I'm going to hang on to it. Stay away, Jerry.
I hear you, but that's all, baby.
Give me a hand.
You're going to need more than that, Angel.
Help me to the couch.
Sure, come on. There you are.
Thanks, Patsy. You didn't owe me that.
I can't take it back now.
How's Gerard?
He bleeds big.
If I wasn't so tired, I'd laugh and laugh.
No, I wouldn't do that, Angel. You're going to be there in time to hear the echo. What's in the bag?
A formula. One other thing, Pat.
Yeah?
One other thing.
What'd she say?
I don't know, Hellman. She took it with her.
And where does that leave us?
Short one girl. She's in the apartment or on her way up.
Don't look too hard, Mr. Novak.
How many more are there?
She's the big act. How do your friends look, sweetheart?
They look the way they should. They watched me get sick. They didn't do anything about it. They sat around waiting for the last ounce of blood to dry up.
You better go with Hellman.
Please take me while you have a chance. Take me. No.
Yeah, you're more than ready.
Oh, I think they look wonderful. They let me work for years. They let me get this way. Then they sat around to listen to my heartbreak.
I don't know why, but Hellman was confused. He finally got the story off the girl in a hospital bed. All five of them had worked together once, gathering government information, but when the big order came, double-cross set in like an epidemic. They were out after a formula. The dying girl had one half, and the other half was in that geranium plant. It came off the boat and went to that phony flower stand. Evie and Gerard were afraid to deliver it themselves, so they hired me to do it. The sick girl was in on another frame. She tipped off Langley, and he worked that hit and run with Dowd, only he forgot to tell Dowd about the poison needle. When Dowd was dead, the girl checked out for Langley's place. Between them, they had the formula, but they got into beef, so she killed him. She came back to plant a phony lead for Evie, and that's how I got sapped. Evie tumbled and headed for Langley's place. When she left, the girl planted Langley next to me in that room and then went back to watch Evie and Gerard in that overtime match. I guess she was too sick to care one way or the other. Well, Hellman asked only one question. How come five such bad people ever got together in one shuffle? I don't know, except most people are full of a lot of good and a lot of bad. The day we met them, all the bad was showing.
Armed Forces Radio Service has just brought you Pat Novak for Hire, starring Jack Webb. Pat Novak is produced by William P. Russo. Jocko Madigan is played by Tudor Owen. Inspector Hellman is played by Raymond Burr. Music was composed and conducted by Basil Adlam. Be with us again next week when over most of these same stations we'll bring you Pat Novak for Hire. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
In about 30 minutes, we'll have the program that Jack Webb is most closely attached to, Dragnet. But right now, we're going to have something a little rarer. It's Jeff Regan, Private Detective, and The Lady with Too Much Hair from 1948.
My name's Regan. I get 10 a day in expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
Webb is Jeff Regan, investigator, as CBS offers you hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of The Lady with Too Much Hair.
It's suite 308 in the Cosmopolitan building on 7th near Olive. The letters on the door say International Detective Bureau, Anthony J. Lyon, president. They used to be in gold, but the Lyon scraped them off one day and made some kind of a deal with Fort Knox. Oh, it isn't much of an office. One room the size of a cigar box, and it smells about the same. There's an overstuffed chair in one corner with a loose spring that's a menace. Right over it, there's a crack in the ceiling. But the Lyon doesn't seem to mind. He says the place is rigged for comfort. Well, that's where I was at 5:25 last Wednesday night. The Lion was sitting behind the desk looking at himself in a mirror. What he saw should have scared him. A pair of shoe-button eyes mounted in a head like a Spanish onion.
You know, Regan, I don't feel like I used to.
Neither do the Republicans.
I think I've got that middle-aged look.
Just the spread.
It's getting a little scarce on top.
Change your shampoo.
I shouldn't be getting bald at my age. I'm only 39.
Your addition's kind of bad, isn't it?
I guess it's because I got so much worry. None of this business takes a lot out of a man.
Takes more out of your clients.
They get good service at reasonable rates.
Well, I've heard the commercial.
Regan, cancel all arrangements for tonight. You're going to be busy.
Doing what?
That's the trouble with you, young man. Too hasty. Learn how to relax, like me.
Tell that to your ulcer.
Ever hear of a lady named Hazel Carr?
No.
Well, you're going there. She's a businesswoman, and we got business with her.
What kind?
Later.
When?
Anthony J. Lyon, international detective. Yeah. 1302 Beachwood. Right away, Mrs. Carr. Okay, there's the kickoff, Regan.
Who's playing?
You and a red-headed guy. Hop over to this address and hide behind a tree or something.
I forgot my beard.
You'll see a red-headed guy coming out of the house in about 45 minutes. Get a real good look at him.
Why?
He's the guy you're going to study, so you'll know him anytime you see him.
Where does Hazel Carr fit?
She's inside the house. After you spot the guy, go in and see her.
Fill in the rest.
She'll give you all you got to know. Now get moving and stay on the ball.
I work for you. How can I get off? Well, I left the Lion sitting there and I drove out to the Beachwood address. It turned out to be a corner house stuck on the top of a hill, and it figured a good rain would wash it down the drain. Well, I parked across the street and lit a cigarette. Watched a kid on a bicycle throwing newspapers. His aim was real good. He got them all on the roof. I watched him finish the block, and that's when my knee action began to suffer. A heavy guy in a trench coat had his foot on my running board. He had a big face, and he turned it sideways and stuck it in the window.
What's the matter, buddy? Out of gas?
No, my foot fell asleep.
Oh. How about a light? Want a light?
Got one.
Okay. Out of fluid, anyway.
Well, pull your head out of here before you lose it.
It's all right. I always carry a spare.
Come on, beat it, Buster. You spoil my view.
Oh. Peeking, huh?
Maybe.
You say maybe? I say yes.
All right, what do you want?
Same as you. You're looking? I'm looking.
Whose side you on?
Depends.
On what?
Whose side you're on. See ya.
That was when the front door of the car house opened and 6 feet of pinstripe gray came out on the sidewalk. His 200 pounds was topped off with a bush of red hair and he had a face to match. It had a flushed look, like a high school boy at a burlesque show. He started down the street. The guy in the trench coat crossed over to the other side and moved after him, kind of slow. Then they disappeared around the corner. Well, he was playing his hand, I was playing mine. I climbed out of my car and walked up to the door of the car place. The bell sounded like something that should have been in Buckingham, but the woman who answered wasn't any queen.
Yes?
My name's Regan, International Detective Bureau.
Oh, Lion's Eye. Please come in, Mr. Regan. I'm Hazel Carr.
All right.
You saw him, I suppose.
The redhead?
Rather large, isn't he?
The Dons are missing a bet.
Sit down, Mr. Regan. May I offer you something?
I'll try a story.
We'll get to that in a moment.
What's wrong with right now?
We have other things to discuss. You have a dark suit, I suppose.
Yeah, I got it on.
Well, get it pressed. You're going out tonight, Mr. Regan.
I'm already booked.
Then disappoint her. You see, from now on, you're working for me.
Come on, strike a match, lady. I don't like the dark.
You're going to meet the 7:10 at the Union Station. My daughter Phyllis is coming in. She's been at an Eastern school getting finished.
How'd she turn out?
Just a vacation. She's dying to see Hollywood. She should have a young man.
Well, I'm no escort, Bureau.
I want more than an escort for Phyllis. I want a man with authority.
She play that rough?
That redhead you saw. He thinks he's in love with her.
We all make mistakes.
But he's impetuous. Follows her all over. He even threatened her. He says he'll kill her and himself if she doesn't marry him.
Well, either way, he loses.
I don't care about him. It's Phyllis that worries me. She's so young. But I don't want her to know that things are so bad she needs protection. You must remember that.
Maybe she'll figure it out herself.
Don't let her. Anyway, I've wired her that a young man was going to meet her at the train to show her around. A nice young man. Can you act the part?
I'll try.
I'll see that you do.
Who's that boy out in front in the trench coat?
I don't know what you mean.
Okay. Anything else?
I made your reservations for dinner dancing at the Grove. Now show her a good time.
You're paying the bills.
And keep her occupied until I figure out a way to get rid of that redhead.
Murder might work.
Think about it. Call me after you pick her up.
Sure.
Now, you better go.
Okay.
Oh, Mr. Regan.
Yeah?
Here.
What's this?
Emily Post. Read up on your manners.
Well, I figured she wasn't telling everything, but it was her play. I headed for my place to clean up before meeting the train, and it took a little time bucking traffic on Franklin. At Gower, I played tag with a truck driver trying hard to crease my fenders. It was about 6:15 when I pulled to a stop in front of my apartment. When I opened the door, I smelled cigar smoke. Somebody was over for a slumber party. A short, stocky guy with a stub crammed in his face was sleeping on the bed. He must have been having a real good dream, because he was tough to wake up. Hey, come on, buddy, hey. Come on, the alarm just went off.
Huh? Oh, hiya, Regan. Guess I dozed off waiting for you.
Pajamas in the top drawer.
How are you using?
Like a scratch. No, kind of late last night.
You should have stayed home today.
Had to see you.
What for?
You know what? That pretty crummy mattress you got.
Well, I'll put in for a beauty rest.
Yeah. Do that, Regan.
All right, punk, let's get to it.
Ease off, Pilgrim. I'm still shaking the sand out.
Well, get up and start talking.
Easy. Name's Mo. I'm a friend.
Convince me.
I'm going to. Hey, you got something to drink around?
Maybe after the talk.
Piker?
Who sent you?
Your insurance company.
I'm paid up.
I'm not in the collection department.
What else they got?
Friendly service, goodwill. Getting close to Christmas.
Yeah, I'll send you a card.
Don't want no card. Just want the pleasure of knowing I did you a service.
Name the kind.
Guys going to meet trains have accidents sometimes.
Santa Fe's not going to like you.
But I figure you will. Tipping you how to stay healthy.
My doctor tells me vitamins.
Mo says it's a wrong dope. Skip the train and take in a show.
I don't like popcorn.
It'd pay you to learn.
You want
to
tell me why?
You got enough. How about that drink, friend?
You didn't earn it.
Suit yourself, Peeper. But being nice is really a neck with me. I'm pretty nasty.
That won't get you an argument.
I'd even hit a guy 2 feet shorter than me.
Yeah, I'm turning pale.
That's a good color for you, Regan. Stay that way.
He chewed on the cigar a couple of times, and then he went out to find a spittoon. Oh, the whole thing had a crummy look, like a box of stale crackers. I tried to figure whether he was working for the redhead or grubbing around on his own, but not enough scenes were in to make it a full picture. Well, the car woman was writing her checks, and I was still trying. So I cleaned up, threw on some fresh clothes, and made it to the Union Station a little after 7. The super chief was just coming in. The station master, who walked with a slight list, took her name and said he'd bring her to me. And then I fought my way to the restaurant, and a waiter brought me a cup of coffee. He was a skinny little guy with a lot of neck muscles. I guess he got that way from talking so much.
Are you going someplace, mister?
Just been.
Oh, got fun?
It wasn't bad.
Sugar?
No, thanks.
Oh, that's no good for you anyway. Gives you diabetes. You know, mister, I gotta go someplace myself sometime.
I got a suggestion.
I've been working here 12 years, yeah. People come, people go. Pete Broidy stays on forever. Hey, cream?
No.
That's just as well it's sour. You know the farthest place I ever go, mister? That first door to the right.
Are you Mr. Regan?
Yeah.
I believe you're waiting for me.
You got a name?
Phyllis Carr.
That'll do.
Oh, but darling, aren't you going to ask me to sit down?
You can handle that yourself.
Thank you.
Where's your baggage?
We'll have to pick it up.
Are you going someplace, lady?
I just got in.
I've been figuring on going someplace myself. I was just telling your friend here.
Get us some coffee.
But I've...
Get it.
Okay. I'm just being friendly.
Yeah, I'm going to adore it here. Town full of mashers.
You'll get along.
I'm much older than I look, you know.
Carry a sign.
Well, you don't seem very happy with me. I'm dreadfully sorry. You're much better than I expected.
Your mother thought different.
Oh, she's a dear. I thought at first she might pick me one of those children from UCLA.
They'll grow up.
But darling, who can wait that long? I want to have fun while I'm young.
Look, what kind of school do you go to?
All girls.
Well, that explains a little.
And it's very progressive.
Here's your coffee, lady.
Oh, thank you so much.
Ah, don't mention it, lady. Yeah, like I was telling your friend here before.
Where are you going, Mr. Regan?
I figured on going...
No, not you. Me. Me.
Oh.
To phone your mother.
Say hello to the dear for me.
I'm going
to
say a lot more. Now, you sit right there till I get back.
Oh, whatever you say, darling. I'll be making myself more beautiful.
Save that for the redhead.
Where'd you hear about him?
News gets around.
You're more my type.
Now, you better settle for UCLA. You don't want to wind up an old maid. Well, it wasn't appealing. Nursemaid to a junior miss, trying hard to work up a sweat. The curtain wasn't down, but I was ready to call off the show. I scratched around for a nickel, and I found the phone booth between the newsstand and a broom closet. There was some old gal inside with a waffle for a hat having a private filibuster. When she finished, I went in and started to dial Hazel Carr. That's when I spotted that redhead in the pinstripe working his way through the crowd. He had an eager look, like an English setter flushing quail. I threw the receiver back on the hook and started for Phyllis. As soon as I stepped out of the booth, the thunder broke. Somebody threw 2 slugs into the redhead and his light went out. The crowd began to gather, so I went back for Phyllis. It was hard going. I was moving against the grain.
Hey, Ray, watch where you're going.
What?
I heard the shot. Just come out.
Look
out.
Hey. Huh? Hey, you.
Some excitement outside, hey, mister?
Call homicide.
I've been working here 12 years, seen a lot of things.
Where'd you go?
One day a whack chased the major all over the place.
No, listen. Hey. Now, listen. That blonde sitting over in the corner with a high meter reading. Where'd she go?
You're spilling the coffee. Now, see what you've done.
What happened to her?
Leave me alone.
Give it to me.
She went out.
When?
Well, just after you did.
Before or after the shot?
I don't remember.
Well, think.
Before. Yeah, before. I remember watching the way she walked.
She get a date?
She tried, but she said she was going steady with a red-headed guy.
Well, things weren't going to get any better at the Union Station. Homicide would be down there scratching around. So I used the back door of the restaurant, picked up my car, and went out to the Lions. When he opened the front door, he had a bottle of beer in one hand and a chicken sandwich in the other. He looked unhappy, like a beaver with a loose tooth.
Regan, where you been? I've been looking all over for you.
Did you try missing persons?
Called your place 3 times, nobody answered.
You knew I was working.
That's what I called you about. I got something to tell you.
Well, wait your turn.
What's the matter with you? In trouble again?
No, you are, big shot. Another bum client.
International detective never had a bum client.
Well, those 2 women just spoiled your record.
You've been drinking.
You better call homicide and get us off that hook and then turn back Carr's retainer.
Regan, what are you saying?
You heard me.
But it's unethical to return money when Anthony J. Lyon...
Oh, stop it, will you? You quit giving blood when you found out somebody'd pay for it.
You're out of line.
Every time you cut yourself, you make a beeline for the Red Cross to get it back.
International detectives under obligation to Mrs. Carr, and we're going to see her through.
All right. You hold her hand in the gas chamber.
What does that mean?
That's where she's going to be after the police get through.
What happened?
That redhead got himself a free ride to the morgue. It looks like her daughter, Phyllis Carr, called the play.
You're out of your mind. Look at this telegram.
Let me see.
It's from Phyllis Carr in New York. She just ran away from school with a Princeton man.
You are listening to the story of the lady with too much hair. Tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. Commissions are still available in the Army Nurse Corps. Graduate registered nurses between the ages of 21 and 45 may qualify for service with this fine organization. Nurses may request active or inactive status. Those on active status enjoy the same privileges as regular Army officers. Those on inactive status may continue their civilian nursing duties, but stand ready to serve in time of emergency. If you are interested in joining the Army Nurse Corps and believe you qualify for a commission, apply to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. And now back to Jeff Regan, investigator, and the story of the lady with too much hair.
Well, it all made sense like a girdle on a Siamese twin. Started out with a redhead and a pinstripe and wound up a nursemaid job with a girl named Phyllis. While I'm in a phone booth, somebody throws a couple of sleeping pills at the redheaded guy. The smoke cleared and Red's doing the big sleep in Union Station and my date somewhere else. The Lion makes it a Sunday special with a telegram that says everything is off. Well, it didn't take 20/20 vision to see that the girl in the station was a substitute or the telegram was a phony. Well, it was easy to figure my next move. I went across the street and I found a booth way over in the corner. I was 2 drinks into the house when the skinny guy in the trench coat eased down beside me.
Hiya, Regan. Think it'll help?
You get around.
So do you.
Still following people?
I gave up. You?
You got something to say?
I'm just here for a friendly drink.
Try the bartender.
I like conversation.
What kind?
All kinds. Bourbon and water. Now, don't look so worried, Regan. I'll pay for my own.
You're going to make a night of it?
I can't. Got things to do. Got to find a man who shot a man.
What man?
The one I followed. The one you watched. Any idea?
Yeah.
Who?
You.
Bum joke, Regan.
Well, why'd you follow him?
My business. Besides, I lost him in a traffic jam.
Here you are, Mac.
Thanks. Well, here's to the newspapers. Seen this one yet with pictures? All about our friend. Fine murder story.
No, I work the crosswords.
Oh, give me crime and lots of it. You know why?
No, tell me why.
It's sin, and sin is here to stay.
All right, you said your piece.
Unknown assailant fires 2 shots into traveler at Union Station. Listening?
It's an old story.
Think so?
He got his red hair dirty on the floor.
Wrong caper.
Well, I'll catch up later.
This guy was different.
How?
Bald, like a boiled egg.
Crazy, give me that.
See what I mean? The guy in the picture ain't got red hair, got no hair.
What's your angle, Buster?
Like I said, I read papers. Why?
I thought maybe you belonged to the Barbers Union. Well, it turned out to be an even trade. I took his newspaper, and he got my ice and the drink. Well, I went back to the office and sat down and tried to figure it out. It was all crazy, like an Eskimo with a popsicle. I started by calling Hazel Carr's house, but the nickel came back. The phone book gave a business address, so I drove out there. It was a pink stucco job out on Olympic, right after you pass Redondo. A red neon sign told you that Hazel Carr Incorporated specialized in hair pieces. Nobody answered up front, so I slipped around to the back door. The door opened into a workroom. I scratched a match. Somebody'd been looking for something, and it wasn't dandruff. Every wig in the place was torn apart. It was just about then that I heard a step, and then a flashlight jumped out at me, and I smelled a cigar. It was Moe.
Hi, Regan.
Well, Sleeping Beauty.
I'm awake this time.
I'm impressed. Tell me more.
Stand still, Regan. This alarm clock goes off.
It's already rung.
I didn't do it.
Body in Union Station? Chamber of Commerce gets upset.
I'm from Florida.
Figure to bring up the orange crop?
Didn't do this either.
Spit out the seeds.
Regan, you're not friendly.
You got here first.
I'm here all the time.
No, you're trying too hard, Mo.
I work here. It's a serious business. We make billiard balls happy.
All right, so you work for Hazel Carr. Say something with hormones.
You're learning nothing that's not in the trades.
Why'd you snatch the redhead's toupee?
You make me tired of saying I didn't.
Couldn't meet his installments?
Look out, you'll get credit.
What's in that toupee?
Ask enough questions, Regan.
Relax, buddy. You'll burn out your coils.
You're in the way. I told you once.
I was born on a second honeymoon.
Well, happy birthday, Junior.
Ooh! I was lying face down in a pile of Santa Claus beards and yak tails. When I rolled over, there was the lion. He was shaking like a polar bear in a French bathing suit.
Wake up, Regan, wake up. Ooh. I could hire a detective for the price of you.
Get a midget and he'd starve to death.
You got a client, she needs you.
What are you, Silent Arrow?
I'm a nursemaid with you around. She called the office.
Gonna have another daughter?
I told you it's legitimate. She didn't know nothing about the phony.
Where is she now?
1629 Locust Avenue. Why?
She's in the middle of a smuggle.
You sure?
It adds up.
She pays the bill. She's straight.
How'd you meet her in the first place?
I got a right to a private life.
Not at your age. Well, I left the lion standing here and I climbed in my car. I made a couple of right turns in the wrong zone, but I found the address all right. 1629 turned out to be a two-story Monterey number in the middle of what looked like a golf course. If Hazel Carr owned this place, too, she must have been selling toupees to Crosby's whole stable. I parked the car and I headed for the lights that were on downstairs. I took the front steps two at a time. Well.
Well, if it isn't UCLA.
I just got in from Berkeley.
Oh, don't be bitter.
I'm not. Where you been?
Jealous?
You're fickle.
Just when I'm in college.
Lucky student, buddy.
I didn't know you noticed.
Well, skip it. It was a lousy act anyway.
Good enough to fool you. Going somewhere?
I got a date.
If it's with Mrs. Carr, don't bother. I sent for you.
You better try again.
Your boss just got a phone call. Well, if I put on one act, I can put on another, can't I?
You didn't kill Red.
It's not important.
Yes, it is. Come on back inside. We're going to have a threesome.
I like it better at the zebra room. We could find a dark place.
That'll come later.
I'm leaving.
No, you're not. Inside, sis.
You don't have to coax me.
Where is she? Mrs. Carr.
Look, it wasn't me. She's been dead a long time.
So's your alibi.
I've only been here for 5 minutes.
You're lying.
I'll make you listen to me.
Look out. Drop it. You pick up that gun and I'll break you in two.
Oh, stop it. Get me a drink. Some over there.
All right.
Look, I didn't kill him. Not either one of them.
Sure.
You don't believe anything.
Depends on the source. Here, this'll slow you down.
Thanks.
All right, now let's start talking.
You got me into it.
Mo?
Maybe.
Say yes.
Don't be personal.
You get me out of the way so he can plug the redhead and snatch the toupee.
Moe is impulsive, that's all. Forget about him.
But the toupee was empty, so the two of you have to scratch around some other places for it.
Shall I run my fingers through your hair?
Let's stick to the subject.
I wish you would.
Did the redhead know he was carrying an empty load?
Nobody did, except Mrs. Carr.
It was a smuggle, and she was holding out.
It's a mistake for a woman, don't you think?
They had a trio, and she wanted to sing solo.
The boys weren't smart like you are.
Maybe she was worried about her daughter. Maybe she wanted to go straight and the boys didn't want her to.
You're wasting our time. Let me show you where I fit in.
No, you're on the wrong floor.
There's a way to fix everything.
You're an accessory.
I can become essential.
You'd get lipstick on my expense account.
Come here.
Oh, break it up, baby. You scratched around every place. You still can't find the goods.
I think I found it.
You figure the old lady used me as a safe deposit box?
Where else could it be?
All right, supposing I got it, what next?
Do I have to draw a diagram? We might as well be realistic about this thing.
What's it worth?
$50,000 of the white stuff.
I don't like to dream.
You look like you could use one. I'm extra.
Meet the contract there.
Oh, yeah. This act figured a duet.
Mo.
You had a good memory.
Mo, baby,
Skip it. Stand still, Pilgrim.
I was trying to get it for
you. I heard the song. Thought Regan might like to hear the chorus.
Oh. Mr. Bet, Regan. You should grab an offer when it's hot.
Don't be sad, Pilgrim. She smiled at all the boys. Come on, let's get out of here. You'll look better with slow paralysis.
Well, I had about as much chance as a clean towel in a boarding house. When the muscle said move, I had to be polite. I guess he figured the car place was too crowded and he wanted new scenery. Well, we went out to the street and he steered me for his car. It was a black job with white sidewalls, and there were two suitcases in the back seat. But all his bags weren't packed. He was missing a small package, and he had the idea it was over at my place. When we got there, it was about midnight, but it wasn't too late for him to go to work.
Now, isn't this better, Regan? Home sweet home.
I never liked it anyway.
Move.
I got a lease.
Those things can be broken. Want me to show you how?
Well, I'll struggle along.
You make things hard on yourself. Now do something the easy way. Get me the stuff.
You're wasting your time.
I got lots of it. You ain't.
Well, I haven't got it.
Mo thinks you have.
Well, then he's pretty dumb.
You... That's on account I don't like your choice of words.
Buy me a dictionary.
You're gonna get yourself two big holes in your middle if you don't lay that stuff in my hand.
Sorry I had to do that to him, Regan.
I forgive you.
I just came up to get my newspaper back, and he was acting nasty.
A little guy in the bar.
My boss doesn't like it when I shoot people.
Uncle Sam, huh?
Mm-hmm. Narcotics. I tried to tip you off before, but you weren't listening.
Somebody should have tipped Mo.
Weren't you watching? I just did.
Well, it was all over fast, like a short beer in a cheap saloon. They took him away in a basket, and all I had left was a spot on the rug. They had a good thing until Hazel Carr got anxious and decided to pull out. Only she wanted to be clean and have the stuff, too. That's what started the scavenger hunt. The only thing straight in the whole corkscrew was the part about the daughter needing protection. But I guess she got it back at Princeton. The stuff? Oh, it finally turned up. Hazel Carr had found herself a good place to hide it. The Fed spotted it the first thing the next morning when he saw the lion. How could he miss? The lion looked awful in that red toupee.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyon. It's CBS at the same time next week for more hard-boiled action and mystery with Jeff Regan, Investigator. Written by Larry Roman and Jackson Gillis. Produced by Sterling Tracy. Included in tonight's cast were Mary Lansing, Ken Christie, Sidney Miller, Lorette Philbrandt, and Ed Barrier. 29,000 nurses are needed to join the new Army Nurse Corps Officers Reserve. For the first time in history, qualified nurses have the opportunity of receiving commissions in the regular Army Reserve. These nurses will remain on inactive status, ready to serve their country in time of emergency. 4,000 of them, if they wish, may choose active duty. All nurses who receive commissions will benefit from the opportunity for specialized training offered to them by the Army. Inactive reserve status will not interfere with a nurse's civilian life. If you're a registered graduate nurse between the ages of 21 and 45, drop a card to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. Original music for this program is by Milton Charles. Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This week it's all Jack Webb on the Weekly Download, and I want to take a moment here to remind you that the greatest old-time radio on the internet is on www.oldtimeradiolisten.com, the radio theater channel. 24/7, 365, great old-times radio streaming, and you want to be in on that for sure. Check it out, www.oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now for our final program, and as promised, it's Dragnet, The Big Listen, from 1954.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet is brought to you by Chesterfield, made by Liggett and Myers, first major tobacco company to give you a complete line of quality cigarettes.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call from an informant telling you that three known gangsters have moved into your city. You don't know who they are or why they're in Los Angeles. Your job, check them out. To sell a product, you have to make it good and keep it good. What do the latest reports show about Chesterfield? Well, our research laboratory has compared it with the leading cigarettes in the country. Chesterfield is highest in quality, low in nicotine. Another good reason why thousands of people are changing to Chesterfield every day. Smoke America's most popular two-way cigarette. Regular or king size, you'll find Chesterfield really mild, really satisfying. Best for you.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, August 4th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We were on our way out from the office, and it was 9:42 a.m. when we got to the Osborne Turkish Bath. Steam room.
Hot, isn't it?
Yeah. It must be Dell back there.
Yeah.
Dell?
Yeah, who is it?
It's Friday and Smith.
Oh, I'll be right with you.
Okay.
Hey, Joe, did you ever have one of these?
One of what?
Turkish baths. You ever had one?
No, I never have.
I understand they're great for colds. You just sit there and it burns the germs right out. It's great.
You ever have one?
No, but Armin, my brother-in-law, he takes them all the time. Tells me about how it does for colds. Next time he has one, I think I'll go with him.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Hi, sorry to keep you waiting. We've been having trouble with the boiler. Got to keep a close check on the steam pressure in here.
That's okay.
Let's get out of here, huh?
It won't make me unhappy. It sure is hot, Del.
Come on upstairs. We can talk there.
Okay. What do you got for us, Dell?
I might not go anyplace, but I thought I ought to fill you guys in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Fella rolled in here last night. Must have been about 10:30. Nightman's out with a cold, so I had to fill in.
A cold?
Yeah, some kind of virus or something.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, we can talk in the office. Sit down, you. Mind if I go over some of these bills while we talk?
No, go ahead.
Well, this bimbo pulls in here last night, really carrying a load. I registered him and had Jimmy take him upstairs. Guy's kind of loud, you know, rolling all over the place. I wanted to get him upstairs to a room, figuring he'd sack out and we wouldn't hear no more from him.
Yeah.
Well, he had a different idea. A couple minutes later, he comes downstairs, wants to know what's going on.
What do you mean?
Wants to know where the steam room is. Says he's not going to sit in the little room all night. He paid for his steam bath. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
When he starts to talk about his high-powered friends and this deal they're out to pull, I kind of figure there's something wrong.
He tell you who the friends were?
No, not right now. Just mentioned a guy named Bud. Kept talking how Bud was going to be sore at him because he got drunk. Must have said it 100 times, how Bud was going to be real sore. Sounded to me like this Bud is the big man in the deal.
I see. No idea what the deal is, though, huh?
No, most he said was that when they left town, they were all going to have a lot of money. More money than I'd ever seen.
You got the name on this guy?
Oh, here's the register here. Let's see. Yeah, you can see right here. Vernon Carmichael, Los Angeles.
Didn't give an address, huh?
Once he mentioned he had to meet Bud at a hotel down on South Flower. Didn't say which one, though.
Well, Flower's a long street, Del. That doesn't help much. Didn't give any ideas at all of what the deal was going to be, huh?
No, must be a good one, though.
Why do you say that?
Well, when I took him up to his room last night, I could see his clothes hanging on a chair.
Yeah.
On top of his coat, he had a shoulder holster. Looked like a .45 automatic in it. The way I look at it, the guy that's carrying that kind of muscle is figuring on scoring heavy.
Did you make any phone calls while he was here?
No.
Anybody had the room since he left?
No, I told the cleanup man to leave it alone. Figure you'd want to go over it.
It's a good idea. What time did he leave this morning?
Jimmy says it was about 7:30. I figured sure he'd sleep most of the morning. If I'd have known he was going to leave that early, I'd have called you last night.
Mm-hmm. Well, we better take a look at that room, Del. Might be able to come up with something that'll tell us who he is.
I got something else for you.
Yeah, what's that?
I mentioned this Carmichael to Jimmy last night. Told him that I thought there was something wrong.
Yeah?
The reason the guy left so early is that he got a call from somebody. Guess it's the guy that picked him up.
Did this Jimmy see who it was?
No, did the next best thing, though.
Yeah, what's that?
Got the license number of the car.
A.M. We got in touch with Leighton Prince, and Harlan Stahl sent a crew out to go over the room. Frank put in a call to the record bureau, and he had the name Vernon Carmichael checked. There was no record on anyone answering the description that we'd gotten from the manager of the Turkish Baths. In addition, a radiogram was sent to the Department of Motor Vehicles in Pennsylvania, asking for all available information on the owner of the car bearing a license number that we'd been given. 11:30 a.m. Harlan Stahl's crew finished checking the room, and they told us that they'd been able to lift a complete set of clean fingerprints from a water glass. They were photographed and classified. In checking our files, there was no record of the prints. They were forwarded to George Breton up at Sacramento to CII and to the FBI in Washington, D.C. 2 days passed. On Friday, August 6th, we got the word from DMV in Pennsylvania that the car was registered to a Howard Nielsen. The radiogram also gave us a description of the car and the registered owner's address in Pittsburgh. On receipt of this information, we got in touch with the police department in Pittsburgh and found that Howard Bud Nielsen had a misdemeanor record. Late Friday afternoon, the kickback from Washington, D.C. arrived with the information that the fingerprints found in the room at the Turkish Bath were those of Vernon Carmichael. His record listed arrests for petty theft and robbery in Pennsylvania. He'd been brought to trial, but he'd been acquitted. Both men were well known to the police department in Pittsburgh as hoodlums. On Saturday morning, the mugshots of both Nielsen and Carmichael arrived. 10:15 a.m. We met with Lieutenant Jack Smyers, and we decided that the information, coupled with the records of the two men, made the incident worth investigation. The mugshots of the pair were copied, and a canvas of the hotels on South Flower Street was started in an attempt to find the residence of the suspects. The search went on for another 2 days without results. Monday, August 9th, 11:47 a.m., Frank and I got back to the office from communications.
You know, we're going to feel pretty silly if Carmichael and Nielsen are already back there.
Yeah, I know.
Beginning to look like the tip from Dell about the hotel on Flower was off, huh?
Yeah. Still a lot of places to check, though. They can...
Friday?
Yeah.
We got it for you.
What?
Carmichael and Nielsen. We found the hotel.
At 10:30 that morning, officers Murphy and Rafferty had gotten the first affirmative answer to their questions about the suspects. A room clerk in a small hotel at the corner of South Flower Street and Bunker Hill Avenue had recognized the mugshots of Carmichael and Nielsen. Further questioning brought out the name of the third man in the trio. He was identified as Ernest Hunter. A check of the name through our records netted us no new information on him, and the name in the description was forwarded again to Brereton up at CII in Sacramento and again to Pittsburgh for possible identification. In talks with Lieutenant Smyers and Chief of Detectives Thad Brown, it was decided to keep the man under 24-hour surveillance. Three additional teams of men from robbery detail were assigned to the duty. For the next 7 days, the three men were under constant watch. Their habits were regular, their movements during the day followed the same general pattern. The kickback on Ernest Hunter disclosed no criminal record. At the end of the first week of watching the men, it was decided that the next step in the operation was to place a microphone in their room so that we might be able to monitor their conversations. Frank and I got in touch with the sound crew at the crime lab, and we made arrangements with them. The necessary permits were obtained from the Federal Communications Commission, and the listening equipment itself was readied. We made arrangements with radio car officers to pick up the suspects for investigation. The sound crew, Frank and I, along with Murphy and Rafferty, stood by for word that the trio was in custody. Tuesday night, 9:40 p.m.
Should be getting word pretty quick.
Yeah.
Red 2 to Red 1. Red 2 to Red 1. Come in, Red 1.
That's Murph.
Yeah. Red 1 to Red 2. Come in, Red 2.
Any word yet? Over.
No, not yet.
We're all set in the manager's apartment.
Monitored outpost 1.
Monitor to Outpost 1. Come in, Outpost 1.
Sounds like they got him.
Yeah, you want to take it?
Yeah. Stand by, Red 3. Outpost 1 to monitor. Outpost 1 to monitor. Go ahead.
Monitor to Outpost 1. Information received that suspects are in custody. Repeat, suspects are in custody. Acknowledge.
Outpost 1 to monitor. Outpost 1 to monitor. Message received. Outpost 1 up.
You heard it.
Now. Red 1 to Red 2 and Red 3. Red 1 to Red 2 and Red 3. Do you read me, Red 2 and 3?
Red 2 to Red 1. Read you. Red 3 to Red 1. Receiving clearly.
Red 1 to Red 3. Suspects are now in custody. Proceed with installation of listening equipment. Over.
Roger, Red 1.
Red 3, please keep contact.
Will do, Red 1. Red 3 out.
Red 1 to Red 2. Come in, Red 2.
Red 2 to Red 1.
Murph, can you see the suspect's apartment from where you are?
Not good, Joe. It's down the hall and around the corner. First door. Over.
Red 1 to Red 3. Come in, Red 3.
Red 3 to Red 1.
Are you in the apartment yet?
Yeah, Joe. We're just starting to install the bug.
Is there a radio in the room?
Yeah, a small table model. It's on the nightstand next to the bed.
Can you fix that before you leave?
Yeah, I'll pull one of the wires so it won't work.
Good. Where are you putting the bug?
We're laying it under the edge of the carpet near the door to the kitchen. Should be able to pick up the whole room from there.
Well, there's nothing to do now until we get it finished, huh?
Yeah. We got the recorder all set up?
Yeah, it's in the room. Sound crew came in this afternoon and made the installation on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to work it?
Yeah,
I think so. Jack checked me out on it. It's pretty simple. Just like playing a piano. Press a key and away it goes.
Well, I hope you got it. I've always had trouble with them. Last time out, I wanted to rewind one of the spools and listen to something. Ended up erasing everything we had.
Yes, I remember that very well.
I was afraid you would.
Mm-hmm.
Red 3 to Red 1. Red 3 to Red 1. Come in, Red 1.
It's the sound crew.
Yeah.
Red 1 to Red 3.
Have completed installation. We're leaving the apartment.
Have you seen anybody in the halls?
No, all clear. We've had more than our share of luck on this one, Joe.
Yeah, let's hope it holds out. p.m. The installation of the listening equipment was completed, and Frank and I, along with Officer Pat Murphy, took up our positions in the room we intended to use as a monitoring post. Officer Rafferty went back to the city hall and told them that we'd finished and we were ready to have the suspects released. In the meantime, Carmichael, Nielsen, and Hunter had been fingerprinted and mugged. A search of their persons had failed to reveal any incriminating evidence, and the time that they'd been held had allowed us to make the necessary installation. After the trio had been released, we received information that they were proceeding toward the hotel. Frank, Murphy, and I waited for them at the monitor post to come into their room. 12:35 a.m.
That's them.
Get the recorder, huh?
Right.
You want to take care of the log, Frank?
Yeah. See, it's 12:36 a.m.
That's it.
Lousy deal, boys. Just want to ask you some questions, that's all. That's what you think. They had a reason.
You're so smart, you tell me why.
Ah, shut up. Will you, Carmichael? You weren't such a big man when he started asking you the questions. You ought to thank saying how he was going to tell them all.
Why don't you shut your mouth?
Probably when you got tanked up in that Turkish bath, that's probably what tipped him.
What tip? A couple of uniformed cops stop us on a routine investigation. They got nothing. Anything on us, you think he'd let us go? Well, do you? You think he'd let us go?
Oh, why don't you dry up? Hunter?
Yeah?
Turn on the radio, will you? Get some music.
Yeah.
And next time you get tanked, come back here, huh? It's Uncle Roman all over town. That's why they picked us up. You said something.
What'd I say? You know what I said, huh, do you? You being a big man, you tell me what I said to him. They picked me up. Go ahead, tell me.
You said something. I don't know what it was, but you shut up your mouth. Hey, Hunter, what's the matter with the radio? I thought you were going to turn it off.
I'm fine, see?
I'll keep broken. Don't worry.
Doesn't make any difference. I'm
going to
hit the sack.
Nice.
I hate you shut for a while.
You open your mouth anymore, you got more trouble you can handle.
That's the way it must to you.
Yeah, done. You guys don't shut up, I'm going to throw one of you out of here. Now shut up and get some sleep. Good night.
Good
night. And that's the way it went for the next 5 days. When the men were in the room, they argued continually. They talked about the deal they were working on, but from their conversation, there was no way of learning what they planned. When they left the room, they were constantly under surveillance, but their movements were routine. They took their meals in the same restaurant. They went to movies. They sat in bars, always together. During the time they were out of the apartment, they made no local contacts. They received no telephone calls. They made none. We knew that they were planning something, but there was no way of knowing what it was. All conversation in the room was recorded and listened to over and over again in the hope that we could come up with some kind of a lead.
but the time spent in replaying the recordings netted us nothing. From what they'd said, we figured that whatever they were planning would take place on either Tuesday, August 17th, or on Wednesday, August 18th. On Tuesday, three-way cars were assigned to the streets in front of the hotel, but the suspects acted as usual. On Wednesday, they didn't leave their room. Frank, Murphy, and I continued to wait. On the streets outside, three other teams of men were standing by in undercover cars. 9:30 p.m. That's their telephone. Get the recorder, Murph.
Yeah.
9:31 p.m.
Yeah.
I'll get it. Hello. Yeah. When? Right. Okay, we leave right now. Yep. What? Yeah, that's the word we got. Right, we'll see you in about 30 minutes. Right. Hey, how are we gonna know you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got it right. Hey, who was that? The contact? Yeah. Susan Stuff just got in. We're supposed to pick it up right away. Oh, looks like maybe we
better
work now.
It's
too soon for me. Let's go.
That's it. Come on, let's get out. I'll get it out. Outpost 1 to units 1K89, 1K88, 1K87. Suspects are leaving room. Suspects are leaving room. Outpost 1 out. All right, let's go.
I wish we knew what it was.
Sounds like it might be narcotics.
Well, it could be. Doesn't make a lot of difference, does it?
Yeah.
At least we know it's something. By the time we got to the street, the suspects were getting into their car and pulling away from the curb. Frank, Murphy, and I got to our car and followed them. They drove down South Flower to the corner of Palm Drive and turned left. Three blocks further, they pulled into a gas station and apparently asked directions. They turned south on Broadway and drove about a mile. At Santa Barbara Avenue, they turned left again and drove three blocks. They stopped and parked the car in front of a small bar. We informed the other units of the activity and asked them to stand by in the area. Carmichael got out of the car and entered the bar. Murphy left us and entered the bar after him. Carmichael returned in a few minutes with another man. The two of them got back into the car and they talked. At the end of that time, all four of the men got out of the automobile and then they entered the bar. Shortly after that, Carmichael, Nielsen, and Hunter walked out of the place. Carmichael was carrying a small package wrapped in plain brown paper and tied with a string. The fourth man wasn't with him. Frank and I got out of our car and approached the men as they stood talking. All right, hold it up, police officers. Over there. Put your hands up on that wall.
What's going on?
Get your hands up there. Frank, you want to check in the package?
Yeah.
Keep your hands on that wall.
Lousy deal. I hope you're happy, Carmichael. I hope you're real happy.
What are you talking about?
I've got to lay this one to you. You really took care of this.
Stand still and keep quiet. How about it, Frank?
I don't know.
What do you mean?
Where's money? $20 bills. Must be $15,000, $20,000 worth.
Where?
As far as I can tell, it's good.
Where's that put us?
Well, there's $20,000 here.
Yeah.
Let's find out where they got it.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action. There are good reasons why thousands of people are changing to Chesterfield every day. Why Chesterfield is the largest selling two-way cigarette in America. Why Chesterfield is best for me and best for you. People these days want facts. When you want people to use your product, you have to tell them what effect it has on people who do use it regularly. That's why a doctor has examined for almost 2 years a large group of Chesterfield smokers. 45% of them have, on the average, been smoking Chesterfields for well over 10 years. What is the effect on these people from smoking Chesterfield? No adverse effects to the nose, throat, and sinuses, says the doctor. Consider Chesterfield's record with these smokers, with millions of other smokers throughout America. Another good reason for you to change to Chesterfield. Regular or king size, Chesterfield is best for me, best for you.
A.M. The four suspects were taken into custody and removed to the city hall for interrogation. We got in touch with the Secret Service and asked them to come over to the office to check on the currency. The agent arrived and, after looking at the money, pointed out several minute mistakes that had been made in the engraving of the plates. He went on to explain, however, that this particular printing was one of the best that he'd ever seen. He told us that the paper used in the bills would be analyzed and that we'd receive copies of the reports as soon as they were finished. 12:14 a.m. While Murphy, Rafferty, and the Secret Service man questioned Nielsen in the interrogation room, Frank and I talked to Carmichael in the squad room. We questioned him for about an hour, but he refused to say anything that would help us get a lead to the source of the counterfeit. 1:30 a.m.
How long you figure you can keep this up, Carmichael?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, now, come off it. We're getting tired of playing kid games here. We want to know where the queer came from now.
Who says it's queer?
Guy that printed it was pretty sloppy. He made a lot of mistakes.
Yo?
Yammer.
See you a minute?
Yeah. Be right back.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Nothing. Nielsen won't say a word. Gives it to us that he didn't know what was going on. Says he just went out there to pick up a package.
You say who they were running the errand for?
No. Tells us just he went along for the ride. The whole thing was Carmichael's idea.
Mm-hmm.
We thought maybe we'd go to work on Hunter, see what we can get from him.
Okay.
You going to stick with Carmichael?
Yeah, I guess so. From what we heard in the room, if there's going to be a break, I got a hunch it's going to come from him.
Okay. You got anything, let us know, huh?
Right away.
Oh, well, big man's back again. Your friend there tell you all about it?
No, but yours did.
Hmm?
Nielsen just laid the whole thing in your lap.
You kidding?
You want to talk to him?
What'd he say?
Well, he told it. He was just along for the ride. You're the big wheel in the whole thing.
He said that?
I said you could talk to him if you want to.
Well, he ain't gonna make it. He ain't gonna lay it on me.
You want to tell us your side of it?
Yeah, I'll tell you the way it happened. That lousy bum. How do you like that, him saying I'm the wheel? I'll tell you.
All right, now where'd the queer come from?
I don't know.
I thought you were gonna tell us.
I'm doing that. I really don't know where it came from.
You turn up with $20,000 and $20 bills, and you ask us to believe that you don't know where it was printed.
I'm not asking you anything. I'm telling you what I know. That's it.
Well, tell us about your part.
Nielsen, Hunter, and me were approached in Pittsburgh.
By who?
I don't know.
We're going that way again, huh?
All right, so you don't believe me. That's the way it happened.
The guy who approached you just walked up and said, here's 20,000 bucks, just like that, huh?
No, the deal was that Nielsen, Hunter, and me were supposed to come out here. We were supposed to check into a hotel and wait for a call. Guy who called us would have the queer. He'd turn it over to us and we'd pass it.
You bought the counterfeit?
Yeah.
What'd you pay for it?
2.5.
For $20?
Yeah, 2.5 for 20.
You paid the other man we picked up?
Yeah, we gave him 2,500 bucks.
You ever seen a man before?
What?
The man you bought the queer from. Do you know him?
No, never saw him before.
He's not the man who made the original contact in Pittsburgh.
No, a guy back east was an old man.
How old?
I don't know, maybe 55, 60, around in there.
Not the fellow you met tonight.
I told you that before. It's not the same man.
Hear him use a name of any kind?
No. Just to call him Pop, that's all. Pop.
Give us a description of this man, Pop.
What's in it for me?
Well, what do you got now?
Nothing.
All right, it'll stay that way. You're in big trouble, Carmichael. If you're smart at all, you're going to cop out the whole thing and cooperate with us.
Lousy Nielsen. Him all the time yelling about how it was all set. All the time saying we had it made. Sure, I'll go with you. I just want to see Nielsen get his, that's all. Just want to see him get his.
We're going to want you to look at some pictures, too.
I told you I'd go the route. You just tell me what you want to know. If I got the answer, so have you.
All right.
What'd he tell you?
What?
That lousy Nielsen. What'd he tell you about how it happened? He tell you the way I did? He tell it that way?
Pretty much, yeah.
Sure, that's the way it happened. Can't be told any other way.
Well, Nielsen might give you an argument there. Further interrogation of the other three men in the operation served to corroborate the story that we'd been given by Carmichael. $2,500 in cash was found on the fourth suspect. Once the other men were confronted with the fact that Carmichael had told us everything he knew concerning the operation, they all followed suit. But other than telling us that they knew the head man in the counterfeiting act as Pop, they couldn't come up with any further information. From the man who'd been in the bar, we learned that he'd met Pop in Pittsburgh. He also told us that as far as he knew, the counterfeiter had been in prison at one time or another. However, the suspect was unable to tell us in what state or on what charges Pop had served time. He went on to tell us that he'd gotten the money in Pittsburgh and that Pop had told him that he'd be contacted later. The Secret Service had completed their analysis of the counterfeit bills, and they told us that they were some of the most perfect printing jobs that they'd run across. The counterfeiter had made one major mistake, however. In the printing of the currency, he'd impregnated the paper with small silken hairs so that it would stand close inspection. The currency now in use is made with nylon hairs. The agent from the Secret Service told us that they had agents working on tracing the manufacturer of the paper in the hopes that they could come up with a lead as to the identity of Pop. The four suspects were booked into the city jail. Thursday, August 19th, we ran the name Pop through our moniker file. Of the 47 cards turned over to us by the Record Bureau, 19 of the suspects listed matched the descriptions that we'd been given. The pictures of the men were pulled and shown to Carmichael and the other three suspects. They were unable to give us an identification. The name and description was sent to George Brereton in Sacramento, and he sent us another 150 possible. These were checked out without result. The nickname and physical description of the man was sent to Washington, and we got back over 1,000 names and pictures. It took us 6 weeks, working with the Secret Service, to check out these possibles. The results, nothing. Tuesday, October 5th, Frank and I got back to the office. I get it. Robbery Friday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, wait a minute. Wait till I get that down. All right, go ahead. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, well, it should check out. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, we'll meet you.
What you got?
Report of the paper and the queer bills just came through.
Yeah?
Looks like we found Pop. checking the manufacturers of paper similar to that used in the counterfeit $20 bills, the Secret Service had come up with the name of a small print shop in the eastern section of Los Angeles. The paper used was of an unusual type, and there were not many orders for it. This particular shop had ordered large quantities of it in the past and was continuing to use it. In checking out the name of the man on the order blanks, the Secret Service had found that he'd been convicted of robbery and had served a term in the federal penitentiary in Atlanta. He'd been released and had come to California and opened a small print shop. We spent the next 2 days checking the suspect out. His name was given as Stanley Jackson, age 47. For the next week, the print shop and Jackson himself were kept under constant surveillance. On Thursday, October 14th, at 11:50 p.m., the suspect was followed to his print shop.
I'll cover the front of the shop, Joe.
Right, Murph. Come on, Frank.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah. Sounds like a press, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Come on.
The back door is around here.
You see what's going on in there?
No. Got the windows all painted over. What do you figure?
Well, it doesn't leave us with a lot of choice. If we go in and he's not printing counterfeit, we're going to make him so hinky that we might never nail him.
Yeah. If we don't go in, he might get rid of the plates. We're in trouble there, too.
Yeah, like I said, we haven't got much choice, have we? All right, let's go.
What's going on? What are you doing in
Police
here?
Police officers, you're under arrest. You want to check the press, Frank?
Right. You've got no right to come in here like this. I know my rights. You haven't got a warrant. You've got no right to act like this.
Want to kill it, Frank?
I got it. Yeah, the plates are in the press, Joe. Doing the green overlay. Take a look.
Yeah. You haven't got any right touching those. They're mine. They belong to me, mister.
Where'd you get the plates, Jackson?
They're good, aren't they, mister? The very best.
Where'd you get them?
Made them. Made them myself.
Where'd you learn engraving?
In prison. When they sent me to prison, I learned all about engraving. Real engraving. Not photo process, but the real thing. Finest plates I've ever seen. The best. Beautiful money, isn't it? Best I've ever seen. Fool anybody. Did it all myself. Pass it anywhere. Fool anybody, anywhere.
Yeah.
Just look at it, mister. That's a genuine article, isn't it? Real money. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect, mister.
No, you're wrong there.
Hmm?
The government didn't print it.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On January 11th, trial was held in federal court, Southern District of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you, George Fenneman. Friends, we've tried very hard to set a dragnet standard. Now, to put that in just a few words, we try to make each program the kind of entertainment that you want. Now, we're going to keep working real hard at that. And you know, the people who make Chesterfields feel the same way about their cigarette. To sell a product, you have to make it good and keep it good. And the latest reports from our research lab shows Chesterfield is highest in quality. Highest in quality, low in nicotine. Smoke America's most popular two-way cigarette. Chesterfield, regular or king size. They're milder, they're satisfying, they're best for me, best for you.
Vernon Alex Carmichael, Howard Raymond Nielsen, Ernest Richard Hunter, Philip Roger Harger, and Stanley Norman Jackson were tried and convicted of violation of Title 18, U.S. Code, Section 474, printing and issuing counterfeit money. Violation of this title is punishable by a fine of $5,000 and imprisonment in a federal penitentiary for a period not to exceed 15 years. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Clarence Cassell, Jack Crucian, Harry Bartell. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Watch an entirely different Dragnet case history each week on your local NBC television station. Please check your newspapers for the day and time. Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Have you tried new cork tip Fatima? It's the smooth smoke with Fatima tips of perfect cork, king size for longer filtering, and Fatima quality for a much better flavor and aroma. Remember, Fatima, with tips of perfect cork, is made and guaranteed by the makers of Chesterfield, Liggett & Myers Tobacco Company.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our All Jack Webb podcast this week, and we'll be back next week with something entirely different, so be here. Until then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.